It is Jace Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you. What an afternoon for the Blue Jays bats as they smash 8 home runs en route to an 18-4 win over the Boston Red Sox. 20 hits for the Blue Jays in this ballgame. They've got 46 hits against the Red Sox so far in the first 3 games of this 4-game series. Just an unbelievable afternoon by the offense today. We will recap all of it, of course, with Kevin Barker coming up in just a few moments' time. We're here with you until 5 o'clock Eastern today, as the Blue Jays have a chance to take 3 of 4 from the Red Sox with a victory tomorrow evening. But Josh, what can you really say about the bats at this point today? It's nice that we don't have to talk about the bullpen once again, because after Friday night, I don't really want to talk about that very much anymore. But yesterday, we really didn't discuss it because the Blue Jays had a comfortable lead. And today, it was really never in doubt. Robbie Ray, you know, going a strong 6 innings today as well. We saw Trent Thornton come in for a couple of innings, and then Jeremy Beasley close it down in the bottom of the 9th there. But this one was all about the offense and, of course, about Robbie Ray as well. What stood out to you in this crazy, crazy ball game at Fenway Park this afternoon?
Well, very nice for a change to do damage against a pedestrian starting pitcher, especially from the left-handed side, right? Dallas Keuchel, I know, has won a Cy Young in the past, but he carved them up pretty good the other night. And Martin Perez is not Dallas Keuchel, but not overpowering stuff, right? Really relying on nibbling a bit and commanding the corners, and the Jays just weren't giving in whatsoever. And from the get-go, they were locked right in on top of him, and he had nothing for them, and they punished him. And they should be able to punish pitchers who aren't in the top tier of the league, or certainly not even in the middle tier of the league. And they absolutely did that today. It was very nice to see Campbigio again, a really nice game, two hits and a walk, reaching base 3 times. Gurriel had 3 hits, hit a no doubt home run. Everyone, aside from poor Riley Adams, really was locked in from the get go today. And just, you envision what this lineup could be whenever George Springer comes back. Hopefully it's as soon as later this week or next week. But even without him, it's still been a top 5 or so lineup by almost every measure in Major League Baseball so far this year. And him coming back should be a terrifying proposition to the rest of the teams in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Martin Perez, and sort of a pedestrian left-hander, not a guy that's ever going to overpower you or anything. You know, in the years past, he was more of a ground ball guy. That has not been the case so much this year, but doesn't give up a lot of home runs. I think he only gave up 2 all season coming into today's game. And you look at over his career, obviously not always against this, you know, current version of the Blue Jays, but the Blue Jays as a whole, he has pitched very well against. Came into today's ballgame with a 2.2 ERA in 41 innings pitched against the Blue Jays. So he gets knocked around today, does not make it out of the 2nd inning. And then poor Ryan Weber, who just got called up by the Red Sox, has to come in and wear it. One of the more bizarre stat lines I think you're ever going to see. 5 2/3 innings, gave up 11 earned runs on 13 hits, 2 walks, 4 homers, actually struck out 7 Blue Jays as well. But probably the most thankless job in all of Major League Baseball to be the pitcher that has to come in here and just absolutely wear it, because the Red Sox have been using a lot of pitchers the last little while here in not only this series, but some previous series before this one against the Blue Jays. So Alex Cora trying to save his bullpen as much as possible. We saw a couple of position players get in there today as well. Marwin Gonzalez and Christian Arroyo. And just a quick thought on Marwin Gonzalez. Guys coming out there throwing 43-mile-an-hour EFIS pitches and then touching 90 miles an hour at one point. It was pretty entertaining to watch that. It was nice to see a Blue Jay position player not have to pitch for once, because it feels like we saw that way too many times in years past. We can all remember Cliff Pennington pitching in a playoff game 1 year, because that's how bad it was. We of course remember Ryan Goins hurting himself in a game. Was that Canada Day? Ryan Goins against Cleveland hurting himself, you know, coming in to pitch as a position player. So nice to see it on the flip side today that the Blue Jays did not have to go down that route. But like I said, we'll talk to Kevin Barker in a bit about this ball game. As always, you can reach us on Twitter at WongSN590, at JGoldberg12, and you can text us 590-590. Give us your name and your location, your thoughts on the ball game today. The offense explodes for 18 runs on 20 hits. They hit 8 homers as Robbie Ray continues to be phenomenal this season. So before we touch on some of the topics today, let's go with the players of the game. Many, many candidates today, Josh. Where are you landing today?
I'm going to go with Teoscar Hernandez, right? A couple of three-run bombs, really getting the party started off on the right foot in the top of the first inning with a three-run shot, and then he added another one later on. And I continue to just bang the drum that he's the perfect cleanup hitter for this ball club, especially since he's been striking out quite a bit less. And you look at the numbers, he's hitting almost 300. He's got an OPS approaching 900 or well over 800 at least, and he's just been great. He's got the right mindset in that situation. Guys are going to be on base, knock him in by any means necessary. He's hit balls the other way with two strikes. He hammered a couple of balls to left field today. Just a really, really nice progression for him. He's blossomed into a really, really good major league player, and it'll be interesting to see what the Blue Jays look at in terms of a possible next contract for him. I think that will be a fascinating case study, but right now, lock and load, great cleanup hitter.
Yeah, he's been incredible in that spot for the Blue Jays so far this season. I will go with Bo Bichette, who is starting to heat up a little bit here. A couple of monster home runs so far in this series for the Blue Jays shortstop at Fenway Park. Went 4-for-5 today, had a bloop hit for his fourth one, but it doesn't matter when you look at it in the box score. 3 RBI, 5 runs scored today for Bo Bichette, who has started to heat up, like I mentioned. So I'll go with him for my player of the game. It is Jays Talk brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you. Blue Jays winning it 18-4 over the Red Sox this afternoon at Fenway Park, where you're pleased to be joined now by Kevin Barker. And Kevin, this offense, we thought it couldn't get any better the last couple of games here, and then today, just otherworldly performance. Martin Perez, Ryan Weber just had no chance today against this Blue Jays offense, which is just wearing out Fenway Park. I don't remember the last time I've seen a Blue Jays team have a series like this. I mean, 2015 was an exceptional offense. We, you know, saw some pretty good ones, of course, back in the day with this Blue Jays teams in the early to mid 2000s. But this 3-game stretch right now, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like it.
Yeah, just think about if Kevin Biggio hitting in the 7th or 8th hole can get a strike below the belt and start driving baseballs in the big part of the field and producing that way, right? You know, I think the working counts and walking, I just don't think that's part of his game anymore. Nobody's afraid to throw him a fastball, but if he can just force the ball down, maybe he's done enough homework when he was on the IL and done enough cage work when it really didn't matter at the minor league level, that now he can start to set his eyes down for strikes, and maybe when he gets it, he's not going to miss it. Just think about how long this lineup can be. I was thinking about when I was watching the game, if George Springer hypothetically would come back tomorrow, you think you could walk in that room? I know how much money they spent on him and what they expect him to do long term and how long they want him here, and he's going to be a huge part to just where they want to go ultimately. But the way Marcus Semien's hitting, do you really can walk in a room and go, hey, Marcus, can you move down to the 6th spot because we spent $150 million on a guy that hasn't played in forever because of the way this lineup is hitting? What, Marcus Semien, his 13th home run leading off. That's got to say something when it comes to, you know, I was always the guy when I was playing that I didn't think hitting was contagious. I think approaches are contagious. And you see Marcus Semien going up and not expanding and trying to not swing at that pitch that starts as a strike, ends up a ball. It's all about velocity, right? If you can recognize out of the hand and you see your buddy that's leadoff hitter doing that, that's contagious. You're starting to see Bo the last 2 days, right? He's getting a good pitch to hit. If he's going to take that giant swing, he has to get a good pitch to hit, and you're seeing it. He's taking those close pitches, which we haven't seen a ton of. And you know, Vladdy's being Vladdy, the AL MVP kind of thing, and Teoscar, right? He has bought his little ticket to the game when it comes to driving the baseball, staying in the big part of the field. What he hit his 13th career home run at Fenway Park. He is, right, you don't have to pull the baseball down the left field line to hit a home run in that park. If you create backspin, if you have a good bat path and a good finish, you can create backspin and hit balls in the big part of the field. And oh, by the way, did you see Vladdy hit the ball to right field off the top of the bullpen? That's very impressive, right, when he's doing these kind of things. If you're a left-handed pitcher facing 1-4 in this order, good luck. Like, when's the break? Like to get through four guys like this that can do damage the way they can line to line, you better have your stuff working. You better be Dallas Keuchel, who can make it look like a strike, end up, you know, in off the plate, or that changeup that you can locate that's never elevated, that's always on the corner down and away. You better be that guy, because if you're the guy that was pitching today, it's not going to be a fun game for you.
So Vladdy in particular, you just don't even bat an eyelash with three hits. He hits another home run. You mentioned effortless the other way to right field. If you're a major league pitcher and a pitching coach and a staff trying to put together a plan of attack for a given game against him, what is the advice? How do you go about trying to get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. out right now?
Well, it's always been, and it always will be, down and away. That's the one thing, and I think the Red Sox were trying to do that today, was go down and away. But he will take those pitches. He'll take those close pitches. And to think that a pitcher in 2021 that doesn't think about locating, that they think about max effort, as long as you can do it, and let's throw secondary pitches in any count. If you're Vladdy and you can lay off that close pitch, you're thinking to yourself, no way, not a chance that he could throw me three right there in the same spot. I'm going to take my chances that if I can take that, and I can hit that ball as far as I want to hit it, because I have the nice little quiet front foot and I can drive down and through the baseball and I have a very level swing. It is a very good approach that he has. And again, those approaches are contagious. You know, if Teoscar Hernandez can continue to be somewhat of Teoscar Hernandez, now obviously he's not going to continue to hit 2-3 run home run games all the time. But if he could be a threat and know that if you walk this guy and you hang Teoscar a breaking ball, he can do damage. It's only going to make Vladdy better if he can get better.
Kevin Barker joining us here on Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Blue Jays beating the Red Sox 18-4 at Fenway Park this afternoon. Robbie Ray, another 10 strikeout double-digit performance here on this afternoon. Kevin goes six innings, gives up three runs on four hits and three walks. Obviously had the big cushion, so you know, you look at the three earned runs and you say, it doesn't really matter. Here's a guy just pitching to the score, trying to get as many outs as possible. But what did you see from Robbie Ray today?
Well, you know, it's about throwing strike one for him. He faced 24 batters. He threw 16 strike ones. He's a two-pitch guy. Now, it's rare that you see the breaking ball. It's rare that you see the changeup. It's rare that you see a cutter. It is mainly the four-seamer. He'll sprinkle it in. He'll sprinkle it away. He'll elevate it with two strikes and the devastating slider. He had 10 strikeouts. He had six of those on the slider. You know, it takes a skill to know how to pitch when you got a big lead. He knows how to do that. He knows how to pitch to lefties, right? He did walk a lefty today when he got to an 0-2 count because he started to nibble. And that sort of, I think, locked him back into, I got to get better with my velocity. I got to get better with my first pitch command. And I think that one little at bat early in the game when he walked the lefty, getting to the 0-2 count and then walking him, it sort of locked him back in. Right, I think he has turned the corner when it comes to, I'm okay when Robbie Ray pitches. I don't worry about him. I worry about the next guy starting, and I'm sure Charlie Montoya is sort of the same way when it comes to, can he maintain his velocity? Can he throw strike one? Can he eliminate a hitter with a slider? Can he eliminate a right-handed dominant lineup in a short porch in Fenway Park? He can do all of these things, and you got to ask yourself, I'm going to ask you guys, right now, today, is Robbie Ray an all-star?
Yeah, I think he is. You know, the record obviously is something that I think a lot of people weigh, but we all understand that, you know, in this day and age, you can't really do so much about that as a pitcher. But, you know, the numbers after today look pretty darn good. He's on a winning ball club. He's striking out a ton of guys. I can't say I've looked at a ton of other numbers around the American League, Josh, but I would wager that Robbie Ray's, you know, definitely has some of the better numbers around the American League right now.
Yeah, I definitely see a claim for it. And honestly, I think right now, if I had to pick one Blue Jay to pitch in and potentially win a big game, it might be Robbie Ray, with the ability to miss bats and he's limiting walks, right? And he's just hard to square up. Ryu's got, I guess, more of a longer history of doing it, but he's not really missing any bats, right? He relies on commanding both sides of the plate, and if he's a little bit off, he has some struggles. Ray can overpower a lineup, and I might rather that than pinpoint command. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, well, I think it makes him able to not have to use three or four pitches. He can get through games like he did today, like he did in his last start with a slider and a fastball. You know, the fastball's so good, he has so much confidence in it. He can elevate it with two strikes. He can pitch into a right-handed dominant lineup, which is a big deal. You get those righties looking in when you're left-handed, and you can do it with explosive velocity in there, and that hitter steps out and goes, whew, he's feeling a little frisky today. I'm going to get this thing going. I have to open that front hip up. Now, all of a sudden, he can be a little bit more efficient with the slider because he doesn't have to throw as many for strikes, and he can eliminate you with the slider. That's the one difference. If you listen to him when he talks on his Zoom calls, is the difference now than five or six starts ago is that put away slider. He can make that thing look like a strike, the four seamer, and then it's that last 5 feet that it has that devastating break to it, and you're getting a bunch of hitters to swing over it. Look, if I'm with you, if you need one win right now today, for me it's Robbie Ray.
Yep, I think he's the guy for me as well with the strikeout stuff, the command that he's been showing as well. It's been phenomenal just to see the change within the season for Robbie Ray compared to where he was at the start and where, of course, he was a season ago. Kevin, as always, appreciate the time, pal. Thanks for doing it.
Okay, have a good night, everybody.
There's Kevin Barker joining us here on Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. As always, you can text us 590-590. Give us your name and your location. A lot of text to get to this afternoon. We will do that, of course. We'll also hear from Teoscar Hernandez following his two-homer performance. And in case you missed it, in case you missed the ball game today, you missed a good one, of course, if you're a Blue Jays fan. They went at 18-4 over the Red Sox, hitting eight homers. We'll hear all eight of those homers when we continue here on Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers, Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
He's making it rain sunflower showers in the dugout. Teoscar Hernandez and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers, Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg, as the Blue Jays win at 18-4 over the Red Sox this afternoon. As they improve to 33-30, they have a chance to win the series tomorrow evening, as it'll be Alek Manoah getting the start for the Blue Jays in the series finale at Fenway Park. We'll hear from Teoscar Hernandez coming up in just a moment as he spoke with Sportsnet's Hazel May following today's victory. But of course, he played a big role in today's win with a pair of homers as the Blue Jays smashed eight balls over the fence at Fenway Park this afternoon. This is how they all sounded.
Pretty good speed on both corners for the Blue Jays as Hernandez sends a ball to left field and it is gone. It looked like it was up above the monster into the seats, and it is indeed a home run. A three-run shot for Hernandez, and the Blue Jays are off to a quick start again. The 2-2 to Gurriel. And this one's in on his hands, but he hits it a long way to left, and he got enough of it to send it out of here. Boy, did he turn on that inside cutter. Home run Gurriel, and it is 4-0. Simeon drives the ball to deep center. Gone! The third home run of the game already for the Blue Jays. This one a huge shot to straightaway center field, and it is 5-0. The 2-1, and Hernandez drills it deep center field, and it's gone. The second three-run homer of the afternoon for Teoscar Hernandez, and he and the Blue Jays have blown it open. 1-1, and he hammers it to left field. And this one's going to leave the ballpark. Another monster home run for Bo Bichette. 13-1 for the Blue Jays. Biggio lifts one to left center field, and another home run. The sixth of the game for the Blue Jays, and the second in as many games for Kevin Biggio. And he hits the ball hard to right center field. Do you believe it? Guerrero with an opposite field home run, is 21st on the season. The seventh home run today for the Blue Jays, and they lead 16-3. Jeremy Beasley's thrown in the bullpen as Rowdy gets into one. A long way to right, and the eighth home run of the game for the Blue Jays. 18-4.
So that is how it sounded today here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Dan Shulman, of course, with the call. 8 homers by the Blue Jays in the 18-4 win. The 8 homers are tied for the second most in a game in team history. August 7th, 2010, the Blue Jays hit 8 against the Tampa Bay Rays. And of course, 1987, September the 14th against the Orioles, the Blue Jays hit 10, which I think a lot of people, at least remember that game. I was just 1 year old, Josh, so I didn't physically watch it. But, of course, remember hearing about that ball game. I think that one stands out for a lot of people in Blue Jays history. But today, the 8 homers, the most ever as well by a visiting team at Fenway Park. So we did see some history today with the amount of long balls that the Blue Jays hit. It's just crazy how good this offense has been rolling right now. The 20 hits today, the 16 in game number one of this series, the 10 yesterday, 46 hits over these first 3 games. And yeah, some of them have been, bleeders. Some of them have been seeing eye singles getting through, but a lot of these have been just absolute laser beams, either off the Green Monster or over the Green Monster.
Yeah, this is as good of an offensive showing. I know it was... ineptitude is not the right word, because it was just maybe, a bit of ineptitude and bad luck on Friday night with the number of balls they stung hard. And in the StatCast era, a lot of that number of, I think it was 100 plus mile per hour exit velocity baseballs, a lot of the times with that number in a ball game, teams were scoring 20 runs and the Jays only scored 5. But they've more than rectified that over the last 2 baseball games. And there were just so many good swings and so many good at bats today. And you just look in the American League East right now, and you look at things that a certain team does to differentiate itself and stand out. The Jays have the best lineup, the best offense in the American League East, bar none. I don't even think it's particularly close. So you look at that, you can hang your hat on that. That is great. Pitching, bullpen, defense. Defense has been, I think, pretty decent this year, so I don't think that's a huge concern. But pitching in particular, in general, but particularly in the bullpen, you look especially, Red Sox bullpen's been great. I think they're a fraud. I think they're a fourth place team. That's where I expect they'll be at the end of the season. Yankees still have a great bullpen. Rays, we know what, even without Nick Anderson, their bullpen has been great. So you gotta supplement your great lineup with a pretty good pitching situation. And now I don't have as many concerns about the rotation. Could you still improve it? Absolutely. Should you look to improve it if you can? Also, absolutely. Bullpen needs to get better, because on the days where you score 4 runs or 5 runs or something like that, you just don't want to feel like a 5-3 game is one that you can't win. And right now, with the injuries and ineffectiveness, the bullpen still is a real concern that needs to be rectified. And this offense certainly was very loud this week in an indirect way of a message that the pitching needs to be closer to the offense to give them some support.
Yeah, we saw Taylor Cicedo called up by the Blue Jays, of course, the other night, and we thought maybe he was going to get into the ballgame today. That was not the case, but it just feels, we heard from Shai Dafidi in the pregame show yesterday that it's difficult right now. His sense from the Blue Jays is that it's difficult to make some deals right now. Teams are being really cautious. The sellers are, trying to wait it out and see if they can get some better offers here. And it always takes 2 to tango. I know people just say, why don't you just go out and get someone? It's not that easy, of course. So it does feel like the Blue Jays, at least for the time being, going to exhaust all their internal options. And at some point, they will make a deal for some relief help. This offense is just too good to waste right now as they pick up the 18-4 win. We mentioned Teoscar Hernandez had a big day today. He went 3-for-6, hit a pair of homers, had 6 RBI with a career high day there. Let's hear from the Blue Jays outfielder as he spoke with Hazel May following today's win.
It's a pleasure to congratulate Teoscar Hernandez on a 11th multi-home run game, Teo. Way to go. That's 13 now career home runs at Fenway Park. How is your approach hitting in that ballpark?
I don't have anything different. I'm just trying to do the same thing that I do in any other ballpark. And I'm just trying to get a good pitch and try to drive it.
And you've been doing that against lefties as well as righties. Can you describe how good you're feeling at the plate right now?
I was a little bit of a struggle the last 2 weeks, I think. And I'm starting to get my swing back again, and my stride and my timing. It's just about time, sometimes we now feel really good at the plate, and sometimes we lost it. but I'm trying to get as quick as possible to get back on track.
And you certainly are getting back on track. Vladimir Guerrero, your teammate, just hit his major league leading 21st home run. You see him day in and day out, Teo. What is the most impressive thing to you you've seen from Vladdy at the plate this year?
Honestly, I'm not impressive because I know he can do that and more. And the way he's been developing the last couple of years, it's been awesome. He's learning a lot, and he still have a lot to learn.
You're not impressed. I like that.
I'm not.
That honesty, because it shows us just how much natural ability Vladimir Guerrero has. You and Vladdy watched Lourdes Gurriel Jr. hit a home run this afternoon. You guys were laughing and kind of teasing each other. How much competition is there between you, Vladdy, and Lourdes?
I mean, every time that Vladdy hits a homer, we try to follow, you know, because we just want to have some fun. And it's better when we each have a homer. So we enjoy the game and try to do our best every time.
There is Teoscar Hernandez speaking with Sportsnet's Hazel May after today's 18-4 win. Teoscar with a pair of homers. He's now got 10 on the season. And as we touched on before, Josh, just the perfect cleanup hitter for this ball club right now. And when George Springer returns, it's pretty evident that he's going to stay there. The bigger question now is, you know, who's going to move down in the order? Marcus Semien continues to swing a hot bat. Bo Bichette starting to heat up. Someone's going to have to move, and it ain't going to be Vladdy in that top three, of course. You know, if Bo's starting to swing it, I guess you can still make a case for him being in that two spot. I think, you know, it's going to be a difficult conversation to have, I think. But, you know, if Bo's swinging it, if Marcus Semien's swinging it, what do you do at that point? Because for a while here, the conversation was, well, Bo's having a bit of a tough time at the plate. He's probably the easier guy to move down because Marcus Semien's putting up an OPS, you know, close to 900 on the season and is, you know, arguably the best second baseman in the American League right now. But if Bo's swinging it, like he has been the last little bit here, that makes the conversation just a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, it does. No question. We were talking about, well, Bo in the five spot makes a lot of sense. And I just don't think if George Springer's healthy enough to play, you're not going to bat George Springer fifth. He's a prolific leadoff hitter. In terms of best leadoff hitters in baseball over the past 5 years, he's right up there, right? He leads the league in home runs in terms of from the leadoff spot since 2015, certainly. So that's it's a good problem to have. I understand those who say, well, work your way back in. Springer's mindset, if he's healthy, leadoff is where he belongs to me. And that's not a knock on anyone. I think you move Semien down. Bo, I don't know. It's tough, right? Like, I'm not saying it's an easy decision, but I think if he's hot, he'll hit anywhere. I don't know how the conversation will go. I've said this on a number of occasions, but I just think that Springer, Semien, Vlad, Teoscar, Bo, 1-5, that just really works for me. And if Bo continues heating up and then Semien cools off a little bit, maybe you flip-flop the two, but that is my 1-5, and Semien, Bo are, I wouldn't say interchangeable, but I would be okay changing those two around. But 1, 3, and 4 are entrenched. For me, it's Springer 1, it's Vladdy 3, it's Teoscar 4. That I feel really confident in.
Now, I keep pumping the tires for Vlad in the 2 spot. I don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know, they feel pretty comfortable with him there in the 3 spot. But if it were up to me, I would move Vladdy up a spot. And then, you know, maybe you have Semien there at 3, Teoscar at 4, Bo at 5. Maybe that's how I would go there. But it's going to be interesting with Bo Bichette starting to heat up by the time George Springer gets back. We hope, fingers crossed, within the next month. Maybe I'm being a little bit optimistic there, but if that's the case, then it's going to be a good problem to have, because this offense is just on an absolute roll right now. Once again, you can text us 590-590, give us your name and your location. We'll read those texts before we leave you at the top of the hour. But we've talked a lot about Marcus Semien and what he is going to be able to get this offseason as a free agent. It's going to be difficult, I think, for the Blue Jays to retain him. They're obviously going to have talks with him and see if they can. It's pretty evident that he, you know, wants to go back and wants to be a shortstop full time. That's, you know, what he was planning to do this offseason before he signed that deal with the Blue Jays. We have heard from Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet, who wrote a piece a few weeks ago that the Blue Jays and Marcus Semien had talked about a multi-year deal before signing that one-year contract. So, you know, that is definitely interesting, Josh. And, of course, the team is playing well. He's doing well here. You would have to think that always helps, but it doesn't always, you know, help the case. We've seen it too many times before where we've had plenty of athletes, not even just this city, but other cities where, you know, they're in the final year of their deal and people say, hey, would you love to come back? And they say, yeah, of course, I'd love to come back. Of course. What else are they going to say at that point? But trying to find a comp for a Marcus Semien, you know, free agent contract this offseason is difficult right now. Just looking at the shortstops that are under long-term deals. You've got Lindor, who's 3 years younger, signing that monster deal with the Mets. You've got a 22-year-old Fernando Tatis Jr., who's signing that monster deal with the Padres. So you can't really compare him there. Beyond that, you've got Xander Bogaerts, who signed his deal when he was 26, making $20 million a year. I honestly think it's going to be a case of, you know, all the other shortstops that are free agents this offseason. Somebody is going to set the market and then teams are going to base their, you know, following contracts with the other guys off of that. But I think it's pretty evident that, you know, 20 mil is the starting point for a guy like Marcus Semien. And maybe you do get up to 30 million if you really, really want him.
Well, he signs the 1 year, $18 million deal. And it definitely was a hybrid of the Jays were a good opportunity for him, and maybe he saw some potential hitting in the lineup that would really help boost his numbers as he heads back into free agency. He probably and rightly should be looking at himself as a shortstop this offseason. I know that there's no shortage of elite talent at that position who is available via free agency, and maybe that dries up his suitors. I keep thinking to the San Francisco Giants as a team that might make some sense for him, right? They could certainly be seen as a team that could have a need at shortstop. He certainly has the California area roots. He loved playing in the Bay Area in Oakland. Be the exact same situation, arguably. Well, not arguably, much nicer ballpark in San Francisco. That would be a fit. So I just wonder, like, is he really going to get less than a four-year deal? But there's just so much uncertainty independent of what's going on at the position with all the other talent available, the CBA, financial landscape of Major League Baseball. I don't think players like Marcus Semien are all that likely to be hammered that much by it. But I wonder, like, what the Jays' perspective is on it. Do they view him as a second baseman long-term? I would say probably. In that situation, like, if you told me he signed a 3-year, $60 million deal with the Blue Jays, whether it's in season, which is, I think, a 0% chance that's going to happen, or at some point in the offseason, that's the type of deal I'm probably good with. 4+ years, $20+ million, I might be a little bit more skittish on that, but 3 years, $60 million, that works for me.
Yeah, I think that would be a good starting point, but I'm not sure that's going to be competitive enough, considering, you know, the interest on a guy like Marcus Semien, because you look at, you know, some of the other shortstops that are going to be out there. If Carlos Correa makes it to market, if Trevor Story makes it to market, Corey Seager, of course. People like to talk about Javi Baez, but Javi Baez is nowhere near the hitter of all of those other guys, at least at this stage of his career. But Marcus Semien, the way he's playing right now, you know, could have an argument for being the top shortstop right now in the free agent class come this summer, despite being, you know, 31 years old. He's going to be turning 31 in September, but with this season he's putting forth right now, it's pretty impressive, and he's definitely going to get paid at some point in the off season. Why don't we continue on Jays Talk? We'll take your text. 590-590 is where you can reach us. Give us your name and your location. You can also tweet us at WongSN590, at Jay Goldberg 12. Blue Jays win it 18-4 over the Red Sox this afternoon. It's Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers, and you're listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Feel that? That's what hope feels like. And this is what hope sounds like. This is Toronto Blue Jays Baseball on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers, Rob Wong and Josh Goldberg with you. Blue Jays win it 18-4 over the Red Sox this afternoon as they hit eight homers, the most ever for a visiting team at Fenway Park. Vladdy Jr. with his Major League leading 21st of the season. Teoscar Hernandez hits a pair. Bo Bichette, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Kevin Biggio, Marcus Semien, and Rowdy Tellez also going yard in today's ball game. You can text us 590-590. Give us your name and your location. You can also tweet us at LongSN590 at JGoldberg12 as we now bring on Sho Ali to help us read the texts and the tweets. And Sho, where are we beginning today?
Let's start with Peter in Toronto, and I wanted to throw this one maybe at Josh specifically, because if you guys remember, Josh called the Blue Jays the best team in the division, and Peter seems to agree. Peter says this is the best lineup by far in the division with some better pitching. There is no ceiling for this team. Agree or disagree, guys?
I said that the lineup's the best, and you're only as good, I think, in a lot of ways as your pitching. Your lineup can only carry you so far, because there are going to be plenty of games where you run into good pitching. You just have some off nights. Hitting is extremely hard. I don't think there's anything harder to do, especially these days in sport, than hitting a baseball. So I just think it would behoove the Blue Jays to add pitching any way, shape, or form to complement this lineup. And if they do that, like, the Rays are the Rays. They're always going to be difficult. This was supposed to be the year where the Rays just, they weren't going to be as good. They were going to, I don't know if it was a World Series hangover or what, but they weren't going to be as good. Everyone really thought so, and we all have egg on our face, anyone who doubted them. But the Yankees are an abomination. They're terrible. Even if they win more games going forward, they're bad to watch. They're bad situationally. They've got tons of injuries. Pitching hasn't been good. That's not a good team. That's a disappointing, underwhelming team. I think there's some vulnerability there with the Yankees. I just think that there's an opportunity here for the Blue Jays to really go on a run with the schedule freeing up and changing the conversation for some who still doubt, right, if this is a year too premature or if there's not enough pitching. But you got to go out and get that pitching. And then the sky is the limit. If you add the right pieces to supplement what you have already, especially pitching wise, then I think that we could be talking about something really special.
Yeah, this offense is just way too good for me. I'm still not saying that the Blue Jays are the best team in the division. I think we learned our lesson there because of the injuries and some of the underperformance in the bullpen. But as Josh mentioned, and I agree with, and I don't know how you can't at this point, they are clearly the best offense in this division. You know, coming into today's game, they ranked second or first in many offensive categories as a team around Major League Baseball. I mean, the Astros have been great this year offensively. We saw them, of course, beat the Blue Jays in the series on the weekend. But as far as the AL East goes, it's the Blue Jays bar none. The starting pitching is starting to come around. Just need the relief pitching to do its part. And then we could see something really special here, as Josh mentioned as well. But still a long way to go. But you got to feel pretty good right now about the offense, at least carrying this team as much as they can over the next little while here, with some of the rotation pieces starting to come together too. So a lot of bright spots, but as we saw on Friday night, still some deficiencies that need to be worked out with this ball club. Back to you, Sho. What else we got?
Looking back to the text line, a couple here. Let's see. I see one from Dennis in Etobicoke. Dennis says, great game for the Jays. Vladdy is awesome, and the rest of the Jays. Keep up the momentum. Waiting for Springer. I think they are one player away for the bullpen and then set for a winning season and playoffs. That's from Dennis in Etobicoke. Lindsay in Breslau. I hope I'm saying that correctly, Lindsay. By all accounts, the Jays should be going for the sweep tomorrow. Can't let those games slip away. I think referring back to the game on Friday. Ron in North Bay says, nice change to see a game that wasn't as tight as Robbie Ray's pants. Fair. I think that's
nothing
also
will ever be tighter. Nothing will ever be tighter than the pants. So.
No.
So good. And then, you know what, let's get to this one. This is from Colin from Halifax. He echoes a lot of these sentiments, like, I can't wait to see George in this lineup. But he also says, sign Marcus Semien to 3 years with options for up to $75 million. What do you guys think of that?
I think the biggest thing for me with Marcus Semien is he's 30 years old. I think he's looking for one more big swing at a contract. Like, I don't like 3 years with an options, as Colin is saying. Sure, I guess. But if someone comes and guarantees Marcus, you know, 5. I mean, that's probably going to get it done. He's 30 years old, going to be 31 heading into next season. I think he wants the longest possible term deal he can get. So I think, you know, that might be a challenge unless you just completely blow him out of the water, Josh, with the AAV. But, you know, 3 years, I think that's a starting point. I'm not saying that it can't get it done, but I just think at the age that he's at and the fact that, you know, you looked at this past year, he was only able to get a 1 year deal. It worked, it's working out so far, but I just think he's probably at a stage where he's looking for, you know, a 5, 6, 7 year deal if he can get it. And we see it all the time in free agency. Someone is going to give these guys that type of deal. So I wouldn't put it past the team.
Well, I know that DJ LeMahieu, I guess he took more term so the Yankees, I guess, could try and stay out of tax trouble. And his AAV is only $15 million. He signed that six-year, $90 million deal. And there were some disconcerting numbers in his advanced profile offensively. And DJ LeMahieu has had a pretty terrible year. He's got, coming into today, he has a 91 WRC plus. He's been a below average offensive player. And Marcus Semien, outside of this year in 2019, has been around a league average offensive player. So I'm not saying that you sign Marcus Semien to a 4 or 5 year deal for $17 to $20 million a year or something like that, that you rue it. But there are definitely some warning signs there. He's going to be past the age of 30. He's had issues in the past offensively. Some of the numbers this year lead you to believe that he's gotten a little bit fortunate. He's made some of his own luck, but he's hit a bunch of wall scrapers. His batting average on ground balls is extremely high. There's some disconcerting trends there, and stuff like that usually doesn't age super gracefully. It's not a fine wine situation. So that's why I think 3 years is probably the sweet spot for me. But there's a possibility that, you know, he could regress big time and be more of a league average type offensive player. And if you sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal for somewhere in the range of $80-90 million, there is definite downside to that type of contract.
Joe, you got anything else?
Yeah, sure. Let's read a couple more here. Sam in Scarborough echoes that. Sign Semien, please. That's from Sam in Scarborough. Let's get to this one as well from Chris in Regina. He says, the Jays hitters are seeing way more pitches in their at-bats now than I can ever remember. They are burning through starters in 5 innings, but still getting into the bullpens early, advanced at-bats. Who gets the credit? The batting coach? That's from Chris in Regina.
I know we like to talk a lot about, you know, Guillermo Martinez, and last year was Dante Bichette, and Dante Bichette obviously still has a role, you know, helping out some of these guys off the field, whether he's just talking to them on the phone, you know, they have conversations. But you got to give credits to the players. Like, at the end of the day, you know, the coaches can only do so much. It's still the players that have to go out there and execute. So it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, but I think it's more the players than it is the coaches, who I think if you ask them as well, they'd be giving the players the credit as opposed to themselves.
Yeah, the coaches, I guess, positive reinforcement and work and habits and preaching all of that is very good. And if there's some tendencies that are creeping in, to have that eye that maybe allows you to correct them, that's great. But yeah, it's the hitters. It's the talent, right? You're just seeing the talent more than anything here. And 1 through 4, certainly right now. And even Randall Grichuk, I know he didn't have a huge banner day, relatively speaking. He didn't score a run or drive one in on 18 runs. But he's been great this year, even 1 through 5. Everyone has just been really good this year for the most part. There have been lulls for certain players, some colder spots. But I think it's just the talent winning out. And especially for the younger players, in the case of Guerrero and Bichette, maybe getting more experience, learning in certain situations what works, what doesn't, having a better plan of attack in a lot of spots. And, you know, I just said this yesterday, I'll continue to bet on this level of offensive talent, that over the course of a big sample size of 162 games, this level of talent is going to produce. And certainly, especially of late, but really all season, that has been the case.
Still got a few more minutes here, show, so let's grab a few more texts.
Sure, let's do it. I see one from PG in Guelph, I think, and PG says, good pitching beats good hitting 90% of the time, learned as a kid. Let's see, we got one from, oh, here's the one I was looking for earlier. Nadim in Toronto, a trade proposal or a trade question for you guys. Would you consider trading Biggio or Tellez for more starting or relief pitching?
I think with the way Cavendish is going right now, that's not someone that you're considering trading. And, you know, Rowdy Tellez, it's been such an up and down season. I'm not sure really what you're going to get at this point. So maybe you could theoretically, you know, get some sort of pitching for Rowdy Tellez, but I don't think it's just going to be Rowdy Tellez that gets it done. It's probably going to have to be Rowdy plus to get something out of substance to be pitching in the major league. So, you know, I don't think that's probably the type of trade we're going to see. I think the Blue Jays are going to be looking more at, you know, lower level prospects down in the minors to make something happen, as opposed to taking a bat like Kevin Biggio, a player like Kevin Biggio, or even, you know, Rowdy Tellez. I still think they believe there's something there, so I don't think they're going to give him away unless, you know, they're getting something in return that they feel that they can use. So I doubt that those two guys are going to be the ones you're seeing moving for any sort of pitching help.
I just don't think Rowdy Tellez has really any value, even if you were looking to trade him for something. I don't think a lot of major league teams are looking at a mediocre defensive first baseman who struggles offensively and has too many, I guess, holes in his offensive game. I don't think that's netting you a quality major league relief arm in any way, shape, or form. So I agree. I'm not trading Kevin Biggio. I think Kevin Biggio is an important player. I understand that he hasn't been great defensively at third base. I'm looking to bring in another lefty bat, and you have a situation where Biggio can roam around. He plays some third. That's why I love Colin Moran. He doesn't need to be the workhorse at third base, but anything that can bring more talent into your lineup or just onto your roster in general, I'm all for that. So I continue to bang the drum for a player like Colin Moran, but I just don't see Tellez really having much in the way of value. And it wouldn't shock me if, whether it's in season or certainly shortly after the season, that Rowdy Tellez is no longer a member of the Blue Jays and potentially more of a DFA situation than being traded.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there as well. Not that I am in a situation where I can't quit Rowdy, but you look at some of the hitting metrics, you know, the StatCast stuff. There's something there. There was last season, and it's starting to creep back up a little bit here, as you touched on. You know, it's difficult, you know, when the results haven't been there. It's one thing to say, hey, you hit the ball hard, but we need you actually to hit the ball hard and put it into play and get results here. But we know the Blue Jays love those kinds of things, a lot of the StatCast metrics and things under the hood. So maybe they do get to a situation where Rowdy Tellez is no longer a member of this team, but I think they want to exhaust it as much as possible before they make that ultimate decision. But a homer today for Rowdy as he came into this ball game late. A homer for pretty much everyone in the lineup today. The Blue Jays smash 8 of them in an 18-4 win over the Boston Red Sox. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Blinks. Send hunger down to the minors and feed your wild side. The Blue Jays and Red Sox will wrap up their series tomorrow night in Boston. Alek Manoah and Nathan Eovaldi are the scheduled starters. First pitch flies just after 7 p.m. Eastern right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Sho Ali, Tom Young, Josh Goldberg, I'm Rob Wong. Thanks for all the texts. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Blue Jays win it 18-4 over Boston. We'll